shit show. It's a fucking shit show.
Welcome back to Shit Show. Saturday, folks. How's it going? Big Friday night here, sitting at my computer. So today, you're going to get to hear our group from last night. So on the first Thursday of the month, I just started this. We're going through the laundry list workbook. So we were on trait two. We became approval seekers and lost our identity in the process. And I know that no one listening right now can relate to that, right? So I'm doing something new. I'm trying something out here, okay? So I am going to be opening up our, so I'm trying something new. I don't have a date yet, but I am going to open up one of our Thursday night groups towards the end of the month to you shit shows who would like to check it out. So I don't know the date yet, but I will send out an email in the show notes. You'll find the link to subscribe to my newsletters. And the two conditions are as followed. So this is to keep the group safe. Number one is you got to have your camera on. We don't want any creepers. And you don't have to share, but I would like for you to at least introduce yourself. Hi, I'm so-and-so. We don't need to know your last name, but we need to know your first name. And you can't use an alias, okay? I mean, I guess I have no way of confirming that that's an alias, but yeah, so we'll see how that goes. So go in the show notes and find the link to sign up for the newsletter. And then once I figure out a date, I will send out the newsletter. For all you people that have been wanting to join for fucking ever, maybe this is a way to do it, right? Because part of it is it scary to kind of make a commitment? Is it? Like, is that part of it? Does it seem less threatening in a way? If it's perhaps it's just attending one group, right? Like there's not as many strings attached. You're dipping your toe in the pond. So I think for you, the person that's been wanting to join forever, and I know that there's not five of you, there's probably 500 of you, okay? But how about you try it this way? How about you dip your toe in the pond this way, okay? You're missing out. Again, you need a community, okay? You need a community. And this is a safe space. People feel really safe in this community. And the lack of judgment, the vulnerability that people share. I think we get vulnerable, more raw, rawer. Is that a word? Armenians are a bit rawer. Try to say that. Rawer. You know what I do? Rawer. Okay, stop. Oh God, poor people. No one wants to come now. Yeah, it's just a different vibe. Okay, it's not going to be for everyone, right? But I encourage you to check it out because people are really getting a lot of out of this group. And if you're going through a hard time right now and you don't have support, I'm telling you, there are a group of people that are willing and able and ready to support you as you go through this experience. If you're going through some shit right now, you don't have to go through this alone. You don't. There are people out there who get exactly how you feel and will say, me too, I get it, I understand, and help you walk through this. There's an amazing group of people that are a part of this community that you have the opportunity to connect with. You're selling yourself short. Maybe this won't end up being your place, but what if it is? You're going to join and you're going to be like, why didn't I join 2 years ago? Okay, let's do it. Let's do it. But don't wait until I send out that email. A bunch of you right now needs to go into the show notes and join. Actually, was it yesterday or Tuesday? A girl had just found the podcast the day before. And she joined the next day. Be like her. So yeah, let's get the damn show on the road. Give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, at Adult Child Pod. And please, please, please give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple, on Spotify. You know, I'm open to feedback and I'm open to criticism. Instead of being, you know, like a keyboard warrior, So give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. Thank you. Love you all. Shit shows.
They say that I should damn the John Shit Show. They say that that's where people go to heal. They say that I'll feel seen and heard, like I have never felt before. So I'm going to damn the joint right now.
So we have the laundry list, and then we have the other side of the laundry list. And then we have the flip sides of both, which is like the goal, what we're striving for. We became approval seekers and lost our identity in the process. And then the flip side of that is we do not depend on others to tell us who we are. Then we have the other side of the laundry list. To avoid becoming enmeshed and entangled with other people and losing ourselves in the process, we become rigidly self-sufficient. We disdain the approval of others. I'm really curious if anybody relates to that. The flip side of the laundry list. We realize the sanctuary we have built to protect the frightened and injured child within us has become a prison. Interesting. And we become willing to risk moving out of isolation. Children need, seek, and expect that their parents or their caregivers will approve of them. When a parent is emotionally, physically, or spiritually absent, the child learns to reverse the relationship's current flow and instead becomes the one who works to gain the approval of their caregivers by acting in the way that seems to get the caregiver's attention and love. This initiates the game of dissociation. Our true identities are hidden from our caregivers and, more importantly, from ourselves. Paradoxically, we lose our true identity and we lose an essential ingredient to healthy development, to be valued for who we are versus who our caregivers wanted us to be. We placate our caregivers and become unwilling victim in the game of dissociation. The people-pleasing false self seems like the solution to all of our problems. We are performing for people and they appear to be happy with us. The problem is that the people-pleasing false self is dishonest. We fall into despair, anger, and depression, fretting over controlling the uncontrollable, our false self, and the reactions of people. In this, we are not alone. We are in a constant state of worry, trying to suppress who we are while figuring out who others want us to be. We make mistakes and become more exhausted from overthinking, and we become angry. We explode with righteous indignation. Don't they know who we are? Don't they know how hard we have worked? But in reality, we chose to hide our true identity. We did not respect our own or other people's free will. We create a mental prison that is made up from shaming beliefs about ourselves. We don't care about boundaries. We're focused on holding others hostage. We become enmeshed in others and lose our identities. In the absence of a caregiver attuned to our needs, we, the abused and neglected children, soon learn to take care of our own needs. We are the children who are often admired for maturity beyond our years and are a relief to our caregivers, teachers, and later our bosses. We are the lonely self-starters who are a pleasure to work with because we require little or no supervision. We are the quiet neighbor who rarely talks to anyone and the compliant partner in relationships. The payoff for us is that we ward off any disappointment by not allowing ourselves to express any needs to anyone or to admit that we need anything. The denial of our needs is a small price to pay to avoid the overwhelming sense of loss buried under the layers of self-sufficiency, the other side of the laundry list. In the process of recovery, we learn to identify ourselves and our needs each time we say, "My name is Henry, and I'm an adult child." My name is Henry, if you didn't know. By this simple act, we begin to take responsibility for ourselves and not depend on anyone to tell us who we are or how we should act. In fact, attending ACA meetings and associating with other adult children is an expression of a need of our true self. And the ACA Fellowship meets that need by accepting us just the way we are without any preconditions, the flip side of the laundry list. As time passes, we may begin to free our true selves from the intricate web of denial that we created to sustain us in the alcoholic or dysfunctional families we were raised in. By regularly attending and participating in fellowship meetings, taking the ACA 12 steps, and reparenting ourselves, we are beginning the process of moving out of the sanctuary we had built for our true self and become part of the fellowship that celebrates our individuality. No longer alone, we can take the ACA steps to become the person we were meant to be
or want to be instead of the person who we became to satisfy the needs of our caregivers. The flip side of the laundry list. I've had a hard time connecting with this trait to my childhood, but I had a different thought about it tonight when I was reading it. On the surface, it's like I don't necessarily view being the scapegoat as people pleasing, but in a sense it is, I've realized. And it really is, it's distorted messaging. I was thinking about how my parents would always bribe me to behave. They would dangle like carrots, like trips or whatever, like if I just wouldn't drink or get into trouble, and I didn't give a shit, like drugs and alcohol all day, every day. Lord's gonna pick that. I don't care about a trip to the Bahamas. But the reality is, it's like they needed me to stay in that. It's so weird, right? Because it's like I know that they consciously wanted me to do better, but subconsciously things were going a lot better for them when I was fucking up, I'll tell you that much. And so it's really interesting how for all of the roles, like for each of the roles that we take on, just the sacrifices that are made, and almost like these twisted like agreements made with the devil in a way, you know, to like sell certain parts of our soul and ourself away. And I think about the consequences of that. I don't know if it's a choice or decision to like take on that role, but just what the untangling of that and just how this is it. Like, this is the whole thing. Like, this is what it is to be an adult child, right? It's like we receive the message, or in order to survive, we had to become who we had to become. We had to cope. We had to figure out a way. And then now here we are trying to unravel that self, that false self, being forced to just become who we needed to be to survive our childhood, and now coming to terms with that and figuring out like, who the hell am I? You know, like what part of that was real and what part of it wasn't? And so I do think that that is what's so beautiful about this recovery compares to other 12-step programs, is how it really is that journey of like trying to figure out who am I? Like, who am I meant to be? And Laura's up in.
I can share. I am the rigidly self-sufficient to the point of it being detrimental person. And I hate that this has come up tonight because I've been working through this. And I've been working through this in my relationship with my husband. And it's hunting season right now. And so he spends a lot of time hunting right now. And he had an accident 7 years ago. And there's PTSD for me, mixed in with complex trauma. And, you know, I prepare for it every year. Like, I know I'm going to have a flashback to his accident. And some years it's worse than others. And this year, because I decided that I didn't want to be the rigidly self-sufficient person anymore. And so I sat him down before he left and I said, I need you to call me every single day so that I know you're alive. And it doesn't seem like an unreasonable request for most people, but it's the thing about, because this accident that he had, the thing that has always struck me as odd, it's like a little post-it note for like, you know, you got to solve this problem, Carrie. It's always stuck with me, is that he was like 6 hours late for dinner and I didn't think anything of it. I just didn't think anything of it. I wasn't worried because we had the kind of relationship where we had established, it's like, you don't have to call me. It's okay, right? And of course, he'd fallen in the woods in a cell phone free zone and broken his back and his leg and had to crawl out and stuff. So there was kind of a little bit of a shitty situation. And recently I realized that whole dynamic where he doesn't have to call me, that's a sacrifice that I make. And it's an expectation that I put on myself to be rigid and strong. And I don't want to be rigid and strong anymore in that regard. And it's not unreasonable to ask him to call me every day. And anyway, last night, there's really shitty cell phone service there. So he didn't call me and I had a little bit of a breakdown. But I consider it progress because my recovery is quicker and I can look at it and I can say, no, this is a boundary that I'm going to set. He has to call me. He has to call me. He has to text me. He has to do this. This is for me. It's not a controlling thing. It's just a basic communication thing that spouses do for one another, and I'm not backing down on it. And yeah, I do consider it progress. I'm tackling it differently. It's been a hard 24 hours, but I'm handling it differently. And I know that that is the recovery coming in. But it's tough, you know, going through something that's PTSD and complex trauma-related. It's like, I'd really rather not live through the memory and then have to process it with my fucked up childhood factoring into it. But I appreciate the episode this week, Andrea. It was very helpful for me.
Thanks.
Sure.
Hi. So I definitely identify with this trait. And I listened to the podcast from this week today about, you know, the crappy childhood fairy. And particularly the discussion about limerence was super helpful for me. And I saw some people talking about it, like, in the chat. And I used to think that was a thing that was happening for me. And it brought me a lot of shame and guilt. Both of them. And I didn't understand it. But I know now that that's not what it was. Like, I would have all these weird thoughts always centering around men, which I think is like why I thought that it was limerence. Like, somehow I was in love with them, even though like I knew that I wasn't. And I've realized that it was somehow, you know, related to people pleasing and trying to protect myself. And I think that comes from being a kid. Like, I don't remember, but I know that when I was really young, my dad was physically abusive towards my mom. And I think from our behaviors, like today and throughout history, my sister and I have kind of figured out that, like, we would go into, you know, that fawn response to try to make sure that, like, nobody ever got mad. Because if we could keep everybody happy, everybody being mom and dad, you know, then things would be safe and mom would be safe. And so then I didn't remember all that. And I still really don't. So then as an adult, like, I would have these obsessive thoughts about very specific men, people that I worked with, some random guy that lives in my neighborhood that has a kid my kid's age. And fuck, I mean, it's fucked up. Like, that's how far we got to go, I guess. You know, it's kind of what you were saying, Andrea. That's what we got to do. I'm really glad to have some clarity about it, because all the guilt and shame thinking that I'm like somehow obsessively in love with these people and realizing now that's not what it was is kind of feels like a weight off my chest, even though it's still this whole thing that needs to be figured out. But I am certainly looking forward to, you know, all the stuff from the end of the reading about getting through it and past it, and not there yet, but I feel like I will be someday.
Hope is our dope. Thank you.
Right, Jen. My people-pleasing self wants to apologize in advance if the phone gets choppy as I'm driving home. So there's so much I want to say. And then she brought up limerence, and now I want to talk about that, but I'm going to stay on focus. So for me as a child, I was the lonely child, the invisible child, but there was something in me that learned that if I could please others, I would be safe. And if I could do well, I would be safe and secure. And recently I started to notice a little bit of regression. I also listened to the episode this week and I did the daily practice, and I had a lot of old stories coming up of, why are they mad at me? I annoy them. Why don't they like me? People don't like me. And I was like, whoa, what's going on here? And I immediately went into, like, how can I find some internal validation? And I was thinking about my childhood. And when I came home and I brought home straight A's, that was not valued in my home. I was called a brown noser. And in a harmful and a mean way. But I've like, you know, I learned over time that people pleasing, that brown nosing, that satisfying other people, that being everything to everyone else. And it came to a head when my mother died and I realized that she didn't really know me. I was 40 years old and she died, and it just washed over me that all of those years of people pleasing was a wall so I could be safe, but then not really be known. And even limerence, we were talking about it in the chat, but I realized that my limerence was my fantasy world that I created in my mind. because I was so neglected and so ignored. So I created fantasy parents, and it just continued on with more and more fantasy. And then once I realized that my fantasy isn't real, that person really isn't going to leave and be with me, then all of a sudden my sense of worthiness is gone. And so it's interesting because sometimes, you know, we have people in this group that are scapegoats, and some of us, and it's weird to be a scapegoat as a straight A student. I wasn't getting like, hey, you need to do this, and then I'll buy you a trip to the Bahamas. Like, it was like, man, I need to get these straight A's so I can go to college and get out of this dysfunction. But I'm rambling on. But thank you for the share.
Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger shit show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Couple things came up when I haven't listened to the episode yet because I've been filling in a lot or and every day I ask myself, am I doing this for the team, the greater good, or am I doing this because I'm people pleasing? So my job is weird. I work with models, actually very beautiful people who come and spend 8 hours with me. I don't know them. I sometimes have to touch them, and they are men and women. And it kind of freaks me out because I'm like, if that was me and you had to like adjust my clothing. And yes, of course, I say I'm going to adjust you before I touch you. Like I jump. These people don't move. And today, it was a male model, and he's 6'4", size medium. I mean, I don't know. Very handsome guy and young. I said, this is so hard for me. I feel like I'm in your personal space. And he was like, oh, don't worry about it. And I'm like, God, I wish I could be like that. And it just kind of struck me like, maybe that's something I really need to work on. Like, okay, I'm asking these people if I can be in their personal space. They are models. They are used to this. They're used to being touched and brought, you know, they don't care. And like, I'm like, God, I wish I could take that into me a little bit so that when someone gets in my personal space, I won't jump. And especially if it's someone that I'm in a relationship with, the jump factor sucks. We talk about this in the small group all the time. So, and then the other thing that came up for me was I was speaking with the female model. She's in her late 20s, photographer who is she's almost 50. And she's had the same job for 25 years. I look at her like a very secure grown-up woman. And then myself, and I'm 57, going to be 58 really soon. And we were talking about like the critical voices in our head that wake us up at night. This woman has been doing photography for like 20 years. She said she always wakes up and thinks, I'm not good enough for this job. This model, who is also a surgical nurse, she's like, same thing for me. And I'm like, oh my God, we all have it. I'm not alone. Am I good enough to do this? And I have to tell myself, yes, I am, Nancy. Go back to sleep. You are fine. You can do this job. You can do Layton's job. Your boss thinks you can do this, and you are not people pleasing. You are staying to yourself, and you're just doing what the team needs to get done. So that's it for me. Thank you for listening.
I think what's sad, I was thinking about our parents not knowing us. I think there's one aspect of it that's sad, them not knowing us. There's another part that's even sadder, that the inability for them to have a desire to like truly know us is really heartbreaking. Who would like to share? Thanks, Mike.
Sure. I'd love to. Not really. If I try and think about what I'm going to say, there's absolutely no fucking chance that I'm going to be able to articulate what I'm thinking about. But thanks, ADHD. But I'm learning that I don't have to necessarily have something, but like, this is an amazing topic. And I'm really proud this week. I set a really hard boundary with like a really clear, firm boundary. It only took me 3 weeks in therapy with two therapists to get it sorted, but I fucking did it. And I sent the text, because I kept trying in person and the people pleasing was just fucking through the roof. Like I was like, when do I do it? Before AA, during AA, after AA? There's no good time for hard conversations. And I guess that's kind of the point, is like, there is no good time for our people pleasing to like, quote unquote, win. And like that the moon and stars will be aligned and everything will be perfect so that the other person will be taken care of. Cause it's about that control. Like, I want to make sure that what I say doesn't hurt other people, because what I say is not supposed to matter. And taking charge of my life and being like, what I have to say, or like my own boundaries, like matter. And they matter to those who matter, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I really like that idea of the placating our caregivers and like performing for people and trying to control the uncontrollable. I was talking in therapy with about how as a kid, I looked around and I saw the set of rules that weren't spoken. It was just all the rules around me, specifically like the ones in the church. No one ever told me outright a lot of these things, but I fucking figured it out because I'm a smart kid. And I learned, oh, probably definitely not okay to be gay. No one had to tell me to do that, but I learned to like hide that part of me in a back room and keep it locked away because it wasn't okay. It wasn't like outright hatred of it, but I took that, and that little kid in me took it and turned it into such self-hatred, and like that at all costs, I need to make sure that I hid that no matter what, and that it wasn't okay. And that therefore like I wasn't okay. And I always just sought to like fill that by like, I wanted to be known so badly, but I also knew that I couldn't be known as I was. Like, that's also the worst thing that could happen. I realized years later that I actually blocked out. I did come out to a friend when I was 16, my best friend, Mason. I was totally in love with him, obviously. But I told him in the back room of our church, like in this little tiny circular library. And like, he had like no idea how to handle it. And I hated him after that. I just couldn't stand that he knew this about me. So it was like for a young man growing up learning that like, when I'm honest about who I am, I get hurt. And I need to push away as hard as I possibly can. And I did that and I ran with it. I had tried the being the perfect Christian kid my whole life, getting straight A's, running the captain of the cross country team, like the head chaplain, all those things, all those accolades that I thought would be enough for me. Like, I wanted to be the star of the play and have a standing ovation and everyone would love me and I'd be okay. And I would get that like bouquet of flowers and I would have to immediately throw it down. I could not be seen liking myself. Because it was the worst thing to be seen liking oneself, because I knew that deep down I wasn't okay. I knew that I wasn't valuable and all of this was fake and it was a big show and it would end and I would go back to just needing to jump on the cycle again and do it all again. And it was never enough. And I like latched on to like needing other people to like try to fill me, like, again, that obsession. Like, I you know, my drinking was a cover up for when I ran away from that. I just started drinking like crazy. And then my like sex and love addiction came in to where I like needed another person at all times to know me, to complete me, to be my end all be all. And like right now today, I don't have that. And I'm okay, which is a goddamn miracle, because I'm not searching. I'm not pining. I'm not waiting for my other half. I'm not needing someone to tell me what I want. I'm getting to figure it out. Like I learned that the only way to do this is we learn by doing. And I hate that because I want to control it and I want to think ahead and figure out what I'm supposed to do. There's no supposed to do. There's what I choose to do for me, for myself. And like, I don't have to do that in a vacuum. Like I get to do that in a community of people who get to mirror back to me actually the kind of person I want to be, not the person I'm forced to be because of all these childhood rules and unspoken things that like ran my life. Like I get to change that now. Like we all get to change that. And it's a fucking miracle. And it's such a relief that like there is healing, there is hope. I can say today that my life is so much better than it was. And like the things that I'm getting tripped up about now, put on a workshop on Saturday and I'm like freaking out about not saying the right thing. I'm not in charge of the outcome. I just get to talk about what's on my heart with other people. And that's what recovery is. That's what I get to do. And I get to share with other people and get to have it shared back to me. And that's incredible because it's a life I've always thought that I could never have. And it's here right before me. And like getting to do it is phenomenal. So thank you all for being here. Thanks for helping me grow, for you growing yourself and all that shit. All these shit shows doing the shit, right?
Hope is our dope.
Hope is our dope. I love that.
So it's this makes me think of that quote that you posted, to stop trying to please people who already don't like you and embrace the joy of being the most annoying person they've ever met. That was really, well, I would like maybe replace annoying with weird or something. I was really that way when I was a kid. When I was with my mom, I had a very good relationship with her, and I was very comfortable in who I was and just being very authentic and feeling free and everything. And then in school, I like became the fat kid in second grade. So then I felt like these people, they just don't like me. I'm fat. There's nothing I can do about it. But it never felt weird or anything to just be myself. And that was during the happiest period of my life, really. So I really like anti-people pleasing sort of stuff that we learn here. And I've had like periods in my life where when I moved in with my grandma after this abandonment happened for my mom, I just shut down. Like I went into a complete denial. Oh, I'm only going to be here for a couple of weeks or maybe a month. I'm not going to bother to try to make friends because I'm just going to end up moving back with my mom again. So I'm just going to be real low under the radar, not make any friends, because I already knew the pain of losing all my friends, you know, because I'm over here now, but I'm just going to go back. So anyways, so I stayed very quiet to the point to where it's like, if people saw me from when I was living in Alameda and then saw me to living in Oakland, they wouldn't believe that it was me. The thing that I hated about that is that I learned how to conceal myself, because before that, I never knew how. I never knew I could. It just wasn't me. But then in seventh grade, all of a sudden, I just exploded out of my shell and just was like I was back when I was living with my mom. And just, you know, it was like that part of me was there. I just didn't let it go. And then I went back into this sort of people-pleasing. It really hit me hard when I got my first girlfriend, because that was when I guess all the abandonment stuff really triggered for me, because it was never an issue with friends. It only became an issue when it was like, just, I don't know, you know, just being in a relationship, even though I was only 14, it was like, there was so many assumptions, thinking that, you know, this is a person I'm going to marry. And I was afraid to make a mistake. So I couldn't really be myself. And I know it's so ironic, because it's like, well, I don't want to make a mistake and ruin this relationship. Well, I'm ruining it because I care so much. I mean, not caring as in a virtuous way. I just mean that I'm not being myself, as if I'm sort of, you can't be in a good relationship and feel like you're constantly afraid of stepping on a landmine or doing something that is going to make the other person withdraw affection for you, you know? So yeah, I've been back and forth on it, and I'm trying to work on that. I'm making progress, so I'll keep coming. Thanks.
I really relate with trait 2 of the laundry list and the other laundry list. Like, I can just do, you know, straight up people pleasing in so many ways. And then oftentimes I do find myself like in these rigid roles. Something happened this week. I was at the park near my house with my son and I didn't bring a purse. And the next day when I went to get my car keys, I couldn't find them anywhere. And the tile tracker had died a week ago. So I retraced my steps in my neighborhood and at the park. I went back to the park. I couldn't find them. I was like, okay, I'm going to have to spend like $400, $500 on new keys. And then there was someone who worked at the park in the maintenance shed. And I like went over and I talked to him. And I'm like, oh, have you seen keys? And he asked me like the make of the car and kind of had this back and forth. And he was teasing me a bit and I think acting like he didn't have the keys. And then he went back in the shed and gave me the keys. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so thankful. And this is amazing. Like, I really appreciate you. And I didn't like have any, like my wallet on me. I'm like, can I give you, do you have Venmo? I'd love to like, you know, give you a reward or something. And he was like, no, just take my number. Just take my number. And it was like such a, like a flashback in a moment. And like, especially in reflection that, yeah, like so much happened in that moment where I was like, wow, when I was like a young teenager, I found myself in situations like that all the time where I was people pleasing, you know, towards men and would found myself in like horrible, I mean, I don't know, horrible situations and then just mildly annoying situations, but like so many of them, I thought that I owed men something. And I'm like, that is fucked up. And I think between COVID, becoming a mother, being over 40, like I don't, it, that just doesn't happen that often to me where, and being married, right, being in a relationship for over 10 years. And yeah, it just like was really super jarring. And I feel like there was so many times in my life where I would have like taken his number because I'm like, I need to please him. That's just what I need to do. Whether it's to be, it's just what I know inside myself or to be safe or any number of things. But it definitely brought something up that I hadn't thought about in so long that is like a huge, you know, part of my life and part of, and I think, you know, from being like 13 through my 20s, definitely something to like think about and reckon with. And fuck.
I'll go really quick. I'm just noticing I was feeling pretty heavy before this meeting and just being here has reset me a little bit. And it's, I find it interesting that I think my baseline is this like dysregulation. And it's like, I think that's really a powerful insight that my baseline is so messed up. And here I am like, now I'm relaxed and I can like, okay, be like, feel something different. But I've spent the entire day feeling like a mild level of like agitation, stress, anger, whatever. And it's just so funny that like, that's my normal, that's my base. And yeah, it's just, it's good to know that that's my baseline. And like, it's just information that I can use going forward to hopefully find a new baseline. So thanks.
I'm curious, does anybody else relate to the other side of the laundry list on this one?
Of course I do. Yes, I do. I don't know if I disdain the approval. It's almost like the laundry list and the other laundry list, because I am an approval seeker and I do lose my identity, but I also avoid, I'm very rigidly self-sufficient, which has, as I read farther, I am in a prison and it's very difficult. The more work I'm doing, the more I'm realizing so many things that I thought like I was okay, like I was doing pretty good, doing pretty well. I just realized so many things about myself. And somebody was just talking about being dysregulated. I was speaking with my therapist last week and we're having a conversation about something. And she's like, you know, she just said it. Like, she's like, you're so dysregulated right now. And like, that's my norm. And I'm just so used to having to take care of myself and do everything on my own, because I've done it this way for so long at this point in my life. It's just so uncomfortable and so difficult to be vulnerable and to trust. And it's almost like what I want so much, what I crave and what I yearn for so much, I'm not able to achieve because I'm just, you know, I self-sabotage because of what happened, you know, and how I've been raised. And I know that I can't, like, it's acceptance, and I have acceptance, and I'm not really blaming. It is what it is, but it's just a lot of work and changing behaviors and thought patterns, because I've always thought that, you know, I thought I got it. I thought I had a handle on it. And I don't necessarily. And, you know, it's just really, it's difficult. We talk about it here all the time. Relationships are really difficult. And taking things, just every part of a relationship is so difficult. So I'm rambling, but I have awareness now. I have tools. I love this group. Thank God for this group. And being able to, you know, just to continue to learn more, listen to other people, understand more about myself. I've gained so much here. It's painful. I mean, the work is painful, but it's worth it. It definitely is worth it, you know, because I'm at least seeing myself coming today, and that's a good thing. And yeah, that's all I have for now. Thanks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.